This summer, I had a bit of a revelation. For the first time since maybe I was in high school, LeBron James was not the most powerful person in the NBA anymore. It's hard to say that he is when his own team, the Los Angeles Lakers, now seem to be centered around Luka Doncic. And it got me to thinking, who's got the juice in the NBA nowadays? And I figured, well, who do I want to talk about this with? And there is nobody who came to mind when I think of the most powerful people in the NBA. Nobody came to mind quicker than Fred Katz, my friend and colleague at The Athletic. Fred does a wonderful job of covering the NBA. He is the host of the Katz and Shoot podcast. And today, on this episode of Business Decision with Mike Vorkunov, I'm a reporter with The Athletic. But on this podcast, we're going to preview the 25-26 NBA season by talking about the 10 most powerful people in the NBA as of today. Fred, thank you for coming on to the show.
I'm very happy to be here. I'm so excited. You thought of the most powerful people in the NBA, and then you thought of me. I have always considered myself to be a tyrant. So I'm thrilled that you thought that way of me, and I'm excited to wreak havoc on this podcast.
Yeah. Well, at least now we can say it to your face that you are tyrannical.
I want to clarify something.
Okay.
We're doing the most powerful people of the 2025-26 season, right?
Yes. Yes.
So it's not the most powerful people in the NBA.
Okay.
Period.
That's a fair one. So let's lay down the ground rules, because we did some off-pod discussion about this. And the one rule is, we agreed on, is no Adam Silver. NBA commissioner, a little too on the nose, right? Like, it's just too on the nose. You and I have both come up with, I'll say, roughly 5 to 7 people that we want to do for this. And we're going to draft this. We're going to pick 10 people eventually, or 10 whatevers. I don't know where this is going to go. But I figure the most interesting way to talk about this upcoming season is just talk about where the power is, right? Like, I mean, we can talk about over-unders. I don't know basketball. I don't know how that works. You can, but I can't. So I figured this is the way to do it. So, ground rules, we're going to draft 10 different sets of people, maybe one, maybe numerous, and we're going to talk about why we think they belong on this list. So here is the official 2025-26 NBA season preview with the 10 most powerful people for the upcoming season. Fred Katz, guest of honor, you get to make the first pick. Please, go ahead.
All right. Well, the first pick's a little boring, because when we talk about the most power, it kind of all depends on how you define power, right? And for me, when I was thinking about what power is, I was thinking, this guy, based on his own personal preferences, which seem to be not 100% locked in, could just with one personal decision completely and utterly change the entire landscape of the NBA. And so with the first pick, I'm going to go with Giannis Antetokounmpo. Because if he decides he wants out, everything will change. Everything will be different. Every team in the league will lust after him. And it will completely and utterly change the landscape of the league, because whatever team doesn't get him is now all of a sudden probably going to be going after somebody else. And whatever team doesn't get him is going to all of a sudden be going after somebody else. We always see whenever we have these superstar situations where they might be changing teams, there are effects with these guys, even if they never do it. Like, how long have all of these teams just been saving up assets in order to trade just for Giannis, just in case? Like, the Knicks didn't get in on Kevin Durant just in case, just in case, because they couldn't shoot their wad for Giannis, just in case. You look at these teams that are building up, you know, for example, like the Houston Rockets wanted Kevin Durant for years. So what did they do? They started accumulating Phoenix Suns draft picks like a year before they ever even traded for him, just in case. When a superstar of this level is thought to potentially be out within the year, it just changes the entire way the league behaves. So I am going to take Giannis, but I'm also going to shake it up and I'm going to ruin your podcast right away because I am the most powerful person on this podcast. And I'm going to take a second person in tandem.
What is this? You can't make two picks right off the top?
With Giannis.
All right, fine. You can do this.
And I'm going to take his agent, Alex Tsiratsis, as well.
Wow.
Because Alex Tsiratsis, who's in there interviewing for Atlanta Hawks president's jobs over the summer, like, he is going to have a whole lot of pull. You know how we talk about Rich Paul having all this pull because he reps LeBron and all these other people? Like, Alex Tsiratsis sitting there with a whole lot of pull in the NBA right now. Alex Tsiratsis can get whatever he wants in the NBA right now if Giannis decides that he wants to go somewhere else. And he's an agent at Octagon. He's going to become a household name if Giannis decides he wants to go. It's not going to happen right now, but we don't know. Maybe after the season it will, depending on what happens with Milwaukee. So that's my first pick. That's my first one.
Was that one or two picks?
They're a tandem. They're like Abbott and Costello.
I'll give it to you.
They're like Abbott and Costello.
You know, I think you made the logical first pick in the draft, right? Like, this is the number one pick. This is the Wemby year draft pick. And I agree with you wholeheartedly. Giannis will dictate what happens next summer, right? What he does, everyone else will follow. He is the man who can create an avalanche across the NBA. I have an interesting question for you then, since you brought up Alex Tsiratsis, his agent, because this is something I was wondering about as the Hawks were going through their president, GM, whatever, lead executive search. Why was he interviewing for that job? What happens if he had gotten that job in the midst of we're waiting on Giannis gate, whatever we're calling this past summer? What happens if he had gotten that job?
Well, there'd be a lot of, especially, he interviewed, I believe, before the Hawks made the Derek Queen trade, right?
I think it was at the combine, yeah.
Yeah, so he interviewed before then. So the Hawks owned a little piece of Milwaukee's draft future already because they have that 2027. They're part of a 2027 swap with them. Now they own a little bit more of it. I imagine there would be a lot of Milwaukee noise. I mean, this is what happens when agents get hired. I mean, look at what happened when Leon Rose got hired by the Knicks. All of a sudden, there's Karl-Anthony Towns noise. And that took a little while to happen, but guess what? It happened. And there's Jalen Brunson noise. And there's Joel Embiid noise because he wants rep Joel Embiid. And there's
Devin Booker
noise because he wants rep Devin Booker. And it's like, this is what happens when a really powerful agent takes over the team, there's going to be that noise. By the way, Giannis is number two on my board, but I strategically took him one because I thought he'd be number one on your board.
Okay,
and I don't think you're going to take my number two guy.
You smoked me out. Well, since you got a 2-for-1 at the number one pick, and it's my show, we're going to do snake draft. So I get to
we're
make the
snake
next...
Snake draft?
Snake draft.
Who wants a snake?
Snake draft.
Who wants a snake?
So I get to make the next pick.
I'm fine.
With the number two overall pick in this completely made-up draft that we have just done, I select the former employees of Aspiration as my pick.
Oh, Joe Sandberg was my number one. That's a great pick. Oh, it's a great pick.
Now, you may be thinking, did I do this because I'm curious how their vesting options eventually turn out and what strike price they got it at? The answer is no. I think what happens with the Kawhi Leonard Clippers Aspiration Steve Ballmer investigation, depending on how it goes, it won't just change the Clippers overnight. It will change the league overnight. And depending on how Joseph Sandberg, co-founder of Aspiration, board member of Aspiration, guy who pushed for the Kawhi Leonard endorsement deal with Aspiration, and now person who is awaiting to plead guilty to federal charges of fraud, depending how cooperative he is with this NBA investigation, it could dictate a lot of things, right? This is not the Clippers investigation of 2019. This is not the Glenn Taylor, Joe Smith Capsler convention of 25 years ago. There's a lot here that the NBA cannot account for. Kawhi, Steve Ballmer, and Kawhi's agent, they'll comply. Maybe the NBPA disagrees a little bit on Kawhi's necessary level of compliance, but they probably will comply with the investigation. They kind of have to. Everyone else, we don't know. And what the aspiration folks tell the NBA, right, is very, very important. And let's walk down this line. If we found, you know, there's an email, there's a text message, there's a voicemail somewhere saying, please sign Kawhi for Capsler Convention, or that's what somebody says to the NBA and Wachtell Lipton as they do their investigation. Kawhi can become a free agent, right? Then we have a question, okay, not only do the Clippers lose Kawhi Leonard, is somebody going to sign Kawhi Leonard? Probably, I assume this would happen in the offseason, so it's not, you know, to screw everything up, but like that's a very good player hitting the market unexpectedly. That changes the number of several franchises, right? Other teams next then have to react. What happens to Steve Ballmer? What happens to the Clippers without Kawhi Leonard? Do they want to keep this core intact anymore? And those are just like, you know, the first order ramifications of all this. To me, what happens with this is it could honestly just change the league for the next 5 years, potentially, if depending on where the investigation goes and the NBA takes the punishment. If, you know, if we go to the full, you know, worst case scenario, so to speak, doomsday event. Is that why you had him? Is there anything that I missed? Like, why did you have Joe Sandberg number one on your list?
I had Joe Sandberg number one on my list because Joe Sandberg completely changed the way the NBA operates. If he walks into Adam Silver's office and says, oh, by the way, the Clippers told me they wanted to do this for Cap Circumvention. Here's the email. Mm-hmm. If that exists. Even if he says, oh, the Clippers told me this, here was the exact situation in which they said it. He is capable of blowing the whole damn thing up. And Steve Ballmer is somebody who we could have on the, like, Steve Ballmer might get drafted in this draft, right? If Steve Ballmer gets suspended for a serious period of time, if the Clippers lose a ton of, I mean, that's one of the most powerful people in the league having serious discipline. If Kawhi's contract becomes voided, if the Clippers lose a gazillion first round picks, whatever it might be, that's not even the beginning part of it. There's also the fact that, like, this is going to have reverberations on the rest of the league and how they operate. I have to imagine that the league is going to put precautions, no matter the result of this investigation. I have to imagine the league is going to attempt to put in precautions to make sure that this kind of stuff, of what's being alleged here, doesn't happen and that there are better checks and balances on it. And whatever they try to do is certainly going to be met by the Players Association in some kind of way, depending on whatever kind of resolution they come up with. And that's going to be part of a labor negotiation. It's just going to be something that is going to be, there are going to be so many bureaucratic steps of this entire thing as a result of this, or of this investigation, no matter the results of the investigation, because I think what's clear is that the league is not aware enough of what's going on with these outside the league endorsement deals and how necessarily they're keeping teams and owners in check with, you know, potentially disallowing them from being able to siphon money through shell companies to their players. So, you know, the other part of it is, well, can I make? Oh no, it's a snake draft. I don't get to make my pick.
Hold up. I'll let you make the third pick. It'll be fine. But I do want to add this to your point. The NBA has already kind of hinted. Adam Silver has already hinted. Hey, maybe we do need to take a look at these off-court sponsorships that are done with team partners. But it also leads to a slippery slope. Like, how do you know about them? The Clippers, and you know, not to go all Scooby-Doo on this, but they would have gotten away for it if it wasn't for that one little bankruptcy case, right? I'm not even saying, let's say there was no malfeasance here. No one would even found out about it if it wasn't for one bankruptcy case. And then obviously Pablo Torre's reporting that spurred all this, right? This was a black swan event that led to all this. And so it's not just vetting every contract, it's knowing about every contract to be able to vet it. So you're asking for a new kind of like high level of reporting and, you know, enforcement mechanism at the NBA. I don't know if it has that capability. Maybe it does. You're asking for honesty. You know, like the one thing, Fred, that everyone seemed to be saying when this first came out was like, oh, every team does this. Well, nothing else has come up yet, right? I mean, I'm sure we've all been trying to see if there was anything else. Like, nothing else has come to the fore yet that seems to match. You know, you hear about some teams, but like, nothing seems to be as credible as what we've seen so far, the accusations at least.
Yep. And that's kind of why I say, like, the Players Association, if you're going to try to put regulations on this, the Players Association is going to be all over that immediately. Because the Players Association is going to say, wait, you're now trying to regulate, you already regulate how much money our clients are allowed to make from your league. Now you're trying to regulate their income outside of the league? No way.
Yeah.
Not only are you not allowed to regulate it, you're not even allowed to be privy to it. You can be if we choose to make you privy to it, but we don't have to make you privy to it. And that's going to be a labor negotiation. That will be a labor negotiation, no matter how they decide to go about it. It is very interesting in that. Are we snaking? We can snake if you want.
No, that's your podcast. You're the guest. You're the guest. We'll play. We'll let you have the. Before the other people eat. Go ahead. With the number three overall pick.
Not only am I shooting down your snake.
This is why you're a tyrant.
It's going to continue this conversation.
This is why you're a tyrant, and we call you that behind your back.
I'm an authoritarian podcaster. Not only am I shooting down your snake.
You got a 2-for-1 at number one. You had the Paul Bearer to the Undertaker going number one. Go ahead.
I'm drafting 4 people with my second pick.
I mean, all right, you've got a whole basketball team and a 6-man, but go ahead. Go for it.
Correct. But this one you'll be okay with me drafting 4. And it furthers our conversation.
Okay.
I'm not even going to give you their first names because I don't even know them.
Okay.
I'm going to give you their last names. Wachtel, Lipton, Rosen, and Katz. No relation. That's the law firm that's investigating the entire Aspiration and Clippers scandal for the NBA. And the reason why I take them and I consider it different than taking the people at Aspiration is because I think we have to look at the other side of this too. If there is impropriety, if there is something improprietary going on here, however, Wachtel, Lipton, Rosen, and Katz in their investigation, no relation, is unable to prove it in a way that stands up well enough for the NBA to take serious disciplinary action on the Clippers, then this will become a thing that everybody does.
Hey.
I was talking to somebody in the league not that long ago, and this person was saying to me, this is a high up executive. This person was saying to me, if nothing happens to the Clippers, if they just get like dinged, like even if they get dinged like a couple of first round picks and that's all it is, I'm going to the owner. I'm going to my owner right now and being like, let's set up a shell organization and just start paying dudes. Because even if that's worth a first round pick, the way that you have to think about it is, let's say they lose 2 first round picks. Let's say that's the penalty. They lose 2 first round picks and that's all it is. And that sounds like a lot. But the way you have to think about it is, do you think Kawhi Leonard's worth 2 first round picks? You think a team would trade 2 first round picks in order to acquire Kawhi Leonard? 100 times out of 100. And so it's the same thing as when a team tampers for a player and they get dinged a second round pick. And then they say, okay, we're going to keep doing this. Only this is so much worse than tampering. Like,
so much worse.
It is so much worse. It is like talking about tampering is a 7-year-old stealing a Snickers bar from a convenience store. And this is, you know, a felony. Like,
yeah.
This is, it is so much worse because what this is this accusation of paying somebody off the books in order to get them to take less money is completely contrary to the integrity of the league and the rules.
Yep.
And it completely changes it. How the league would operate, it completely changes and basically makes the effect of a salary cap totally irrelevant. On top of the fact, by the way, then it means you're not paying luxury tax dollars that should be distributed to the rest of the owners that you should otherwise be paying if you're paying a guy less than the max, which I don't really get how that's not like that should be like a, that's like a financial issue. It's like, I'm just going to call it a financial issue if that's the truth of what's happening here. So there is a lot of pressure on this firm to be able to find that concrete evidence in some way, shape, or form, whether it's just flat out offered up to them by aspiration or whether they are able to find it because of their investigative skills. But there is a lot of pressure on them to be able to find this because if the league says, we don't feel like we can do a damn thing if we don't have a smoking gun, and they're unable to find a smoking gun. However, they're able to find enough to be able for everybody to be able to say, well, it looks like you can do this crap. And if there's no smoking gun, even if the Clippers did nothing, even if the Clippers are totally innocent, the result of this will be, oh, well, you could totally look like you did it. You can have everybody think that you did it. You can have nobody defending you. But if there's no smoking gun, then you're good. And ultimately, you're going to save money in the long term because you're not going to pay tax dollars on stuff. You'll never have to pay the tax ever again.
What's enough of a penalty to be something that stops owners and teams from doing this again? What is the biggest, what is the deterrent going to be if we think there is one? Like, how hard, if Wachtell Lipton has its A game, it's has its Giannis 50 burger in game six type of moment for Wachtell Lipton, if they do that and they find what they're supposed to find, what is the penalty that will make the next owner say, no, 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 hold up, I don't want it that bad?
Are we speaking realistically or are we speaking in a fantasy world?
No, no, no. Realistically, the NBA is constrained by the CBA. It outlaws, I mean, it outlines what the punishments are potentially. I mean, I guess it could push for further beyond that, but that'll have its own kind of problems too. Like, realistically.
In a fantasy world, what you do is you make an owner sell a team. In real life, I think voiding the contract is a very good one because it will make the players not want to do it. So you'll have the player saying, oh my God, the contract was voided. Like, I just lost all the money and now I'm a free agent and all I can sign for is the mid-level exception.
Yeah.
Oh God. Like, that's number one. Number two is significant suspensions for every single person who you have proof is involved. Now, I don't even know how you would deal with suspending an owner because I know you can. Like,
we've seen it before, both Capstar Convention and, you know, we saw it with Robert Sarver a few years ago.
100%. But here's why I say that. What happens when Robert Sarver is suspended?
He's still making
financial calls. Or when Glenn Taylor is suspended?
They're still figuring out payroll and signing off on that.
But who runs the team?
I mean, listen, depending on CEO, whoever they hired, right? Alternate
governor, right?
Yeah.
Who's the alternate governor for the Clippers?
I think it's Dennis Wong, if I know correctly.
So.
Yeah.
And what if you find out that various other Clippers executives are involved in this, either because they had knowledge of it or because they were actively engaging in it?
Yeah.
It's just a little. It's a little more complicated than just like the Glenn Taylor situation where you actually find like a huge sign on Glenn Taylor's
head. Yeah, you actually have the memo.
Yeah, you have the memo that's like, I did this, come get me, you know? It's a little different than that. You know, like George Steinbrenner was suspended in the 90s by Major League Baseball and Gene Michael, who was the GM at the time, kind of had full say. Yeah. On everything. But I think making best efforts to have significant suspensions, you obviously can't have a fine that matters because the league rules preclude you from fining Ballmer more than $10 million. And I mean, what's $10 million to the sixth richest man in the world? It's nothing. It's absolutely nothing.
And you know what it is? It's your second investment into aspiration when they're already losing money and firing everyone.
Yeah. And so like, I think significant suspensions to those involved, voiding a contract, and just like the total hamstringing of a franchise. Now, the thing that I keep getting stuck up on, though, is it like, I don't think it's good for the league to just ruin an entire franchise. Like, I don't think it was good for the health of the league that after the Joe Smith situation, they just ruined the Timberwolves. And there was just 14 years of no playoff basketball in Minnesota. And I think the league would agree with me on that because they ended up lessening the punishment years later because they were like, eh, this is too much. Like, I don't think it's, you're going to kill a franchise's fan base, its revenue, and a prominent one in a big market in this case. Yeah. Like, I don't think that's good for the league. So I kind of vacillate between, like, how can you come up with something that's a worthwhile punishment, but that also is, like, not going to be at the detriment of the NBA? Because you shouldn't do something at the detriment of the NBA. But I do think significant suspensions, I do think voiding of contracts, I do think loss of draft picks, like, if there is real proof of this, if they come away with real proof of this from their investigation, like, they have to lay down the hammer. They cannot just poo-poo it. Like, this is the worst basketball thing you can do. Like, yeah, the worst basketball crime you can do. If we're talking, like, you know, non-criminal stuff, this is the worst basketball thing you can do you're running a team.
I mean, this is the thing, right? With the Robert Sarver suspension, you could argue it was a little bit light compared to what happened with Donald Sterling. You know, 8 years before that, it was a $10 million fine, a one-year suspension. But I think the NBA would argue, you know, or you'd take the argument like, okay, it still led to him selling the team instead of just dictating that he has to sell the team. Here, you don't want Steve Ballmer to sell the team. You want him in the league. You want his juice. You want him paying $2 billion to build an arena. You want him doing all the stuff that he does on the auditing committee for the NBA. You want him for all those reasons, right? So it's also got to be kind of triangulated in a way that probably doesn't piss him off too badly. And you got to make sure you have the goods when it comes to that suspension process. And, you know, that's where Wachtell Lipton, Rosen and Katz comes into the fray. And no when relation. Your family members figure out how they want to suspend or what they want to find, what they find in their investigation, I hope they'll give the Athletic the scoop.
All right, you're up.
All right, number four. I have a few wild cards of my own, so I'm going to keep it basic because I think they might still be on the board later. Number four pick, I'm going to go with Nikola Jokic. Nikola Jokic, he's a year away from being a year out of free agency because he has a player option after two seasons from now. The Nuggets, I mean, like, what were they, a half away from going to the Western Conference Finals? And we have a totally different champion last year. They got better. And we talk about Giannis all the time, but I mean, this could be Giannis in 6 months, theoretically. I know that Nikola Jokic has said, like, hey, I want to be a Nugget for life. But, you know, sometimes you take those with a grain of salt. The ink on contract paper is what we want to see, right? And he didn't sign that this past summer. We'll see what happens next summer. And there will be a lot of teams who will want Nikola Jokic on their team. And, you know, it could work in tandem with the whole Giannis situation as they start to eye that instead. And the other thing, like, I don't know, wasn't it a little odd that Nikola Jokic's Serbian-based agent was on a yacht with Maverick Carter and LeBron James talking about another basketball league? Like, That kind of, I think, raised everyone's eyebrows a little bit. No. So that's who I got at number four, Nikola Jokic. What he does and says this entire year, it's going to be fascinating to watch. Not to mention, in 2 years, he'll be, what, 32? Does Nikola Jokic want to play longer than that? Like, I don't know. He's making a lot of money, but maybe it's just time for a life of horses.
We should mention, Jokic just said that he wants to stay in Denver.
He said, I want to be a Nugget for life.
Yep. And that's a big difference
between
him and Giannis, where Giannis has kind of left the door creaked open. Do you think there's anybody that we will draft in the next six picks or in the first four picks who wants to be on this list less than Nikola Jokic?
Do you think that anyone is less likely to listen to this podcast than Nicole? I could see Giannis listening to this podcast. Who knows? Maybe someone from Walk to Lipton is going to listen to this podcast.
I'll tell you this. Someone from the Clipper is going to listen to this podcast. Someone from the Clipper is going to listen to this podcast. We're going to get a call about 2 minutes after this podcast post.
Call Fred. Don't call me. All right, Fred. I'll let you go next with the number five pick. Who you got?
Number five pick? I'm a little torn here. I think I'm going to take Sam Presti.
Okay. I was thinking about him.
He is the GM of the defending champs. He is, I'm going to say, especially based on this, the work that you've done where you talk to people around the league about the best front offices in the league, and everybody is just like, it's Sam Presti. I would say he is the most respected by his peers executive in the league. And at the same time, I would say he is the most feared executive in the league. Whereas, like, look, I have spoken with executives where they're like, yeah, I'm not going to trade with Sam Presti. Like, if Sam wants to make a deal, I'm kind of screwed. Like, I'm not gonna do that. He's just taking down people's jobs left and right with the deals that he's making for people. There's that element, but it's not just that. There's the fact that whenever any star comes up, it's not just Oklahoma City, because Oklahoma City has gone through a lot of the picks now that made their pick package so valuable, but they still have one of the most pick packages in the league, along with like Houston and San Antonio and Brooklyn. And if they want to trade for literally anyone, they can do it. If they want to make literally any move, they can do it. And it's not just that. And it's not just that he's put a team in maybe the best concurrently present and future situation that we've seen, I don't know, at least since I can remember. Like, I don't know if there's ever been a team this good in the present and this set up for the future, for its era. It's also that Sam Presti is so incredibly involved in so much stuff that goes on at the league office level. Like, he has this tremendous interest in league happenings. Mm-hmm. He has this tremendous interest and is incredibly opinionated on every single CBA that has happened during his time. He's on all of these league committees, which shape a lot of this. He had a lot to do with this 2023 CBA. It's not like he was negotiating the 2023 CBA, but he's so respected throughout the league that, like, people are coming to him for these sorts of things. People are coming to him and asking his opinions on these sorts of things in the league, around the league, all of that. And he's very opinionated on league matters. He's very opinionated on not just basketball rules, but business things that happen throughout the league. And when he speaks up to the league about things, like, people are like, okay, Sam Presti has an opinion. So I think he's kind of reached that level as an executive, probably more than any other executive. There are some others who, like, you know, like, for example, like Masai Ujiri had a similar sort of reputation. Like, I wouldn't say is similar from a basketball GMing perspective, but was similar from a being very important to the league. Like, there were people who would say to me that Masai one day could be commissioner of the NBA because he's that type of personality. He's that sort of intelligent. He's that type of business acumen. He's that sort of political acumen. And I think Sam Presti is kind of thought of in a very similar way, where I do not see him leaving his post at any point in the near or maybe even distant future. But if he wanted to, I bet he could. I bet he could, and do something high up in the league office, and or run a tech firm or whatever the hell else he wants to do, but I think it's Sam here. I feel pretty good about this pick.
No, that's a good one, and we could see Hinkie and Presti run a VC firm out in the Bay at one point, maybe in 10 years. But I think that's a very good pick for all the reasons that you mentioned. It is both his effect on the actual basketball of things, and all the gravitas and strength that he has outside of it. Now, I'm going to go with someone at number six that's not even a control owner yet, but I want to go with this person on my list. I'm going to take Mark Walter, the incoming governor of the Los Angeles Lakers, at number six. The sale of the Lakers, the control of the Lakers, should probably finish up sometime in this upcoming season. And I think there's already interest about what the Lakers will look like under Mark Walter. We've seen what he has done to the Dodgers under his stewardship. And I understand that the Oklahoma City Thunder and Sam Presti won best front office across all sports, actually, in the rankings that The Athletic did. But for my money, I think the Dodgers are the best organization in all of professional sports, in a sport where I think it's harder to do that and harder to control outcomes with baseball. And who's the guy who owns that team? That's Mark Walter, right? And the thing that everyone correctly said about that, you know, that transaction when it was announced is, how will he change the Lakers? I think there are already people looking to see when he takes over what the hiring cycle will look like for that front office, right? Who will be able to come in? Who will they hire? How quickly will they hire? That, you know, the Lakers right now are kind of a mom and pop organization. They have some smart people there, but there's not a lot of people there, right? The buses have run it pretty lean over the years. And I mean, two of the assistant GMs are Bus brothers. Jeannie Buss obviously is the control owner there right now. And Rob Pelinka is the GM. But the Lakers are already in the middle of a reboot. They went from the LeBron Lakers to the Luka Lakers. Mark Walter buys the team at a $10 billion valuation. Do the Lakers look the same in 18 months once he officially takes over? He slow walked things with the Dodgers, right? Nobody, I don't know if people always realize that, is that he didn't just say, hey, I come in, I buy the team, everyone's fired. But he started to put his imprint on it and just the way the team functioned and the people that he wanted to work in his organization. So I'm curious what that's going to look like. The Lakers sale, I think, will be done sometime during this upcoming season. And he's already a minority owner there in LA. So I'm curious what that's going to be like.
It's a great pick. I'm into it.
Okay. Who you got?
Well, in the spirit of this being based on LeBron James not being the most powerful person in the NBA anymore, which I agree with, I think it's a great assessment and a great jumping off point. And I completely agree with the logic for why. It's because, like, the Lakers are building around Luka. So if LeBron's not even calling the shots in his organization, how can he be the guy in the league? I think is actually a weird argument to be made that LeBron is more powerful in the NBA than he is in the Lakers.
Mm-hmm. He's not powerless, that's for sure.
That's for sure. And that is why my next pick is still Rich Paul.
Okay.
Because LeBron James is going to be a free agent next year. And if he chooses to play, teams are still going to bend over backwards to have LeBron James. I mean, I don't know if the Lakers will, because that situation is so weird. But teams are going to bend over backwards to have LeBron James. And that is going to be maybe the most interesting LeBron James free agency of his entire career, if he chooses to continue playing. And meanwhile, Rich Paul is still representing, like, all of these huge, huge names. It's not like he's just a LeBron James guy. I mean, he's one of the biggest agents in the entire league, is responsible for so many of the strings that are being pulled behind everything. And you add in that, like, he is directly tied to LeBron's power and LeBron is directly tied to his power. And sometimes I think people talk about Rich Paul as like, oh, he's just LeBron's guy. Anyone could have been Rich Paul. I think that's some BS. Like, anyone couldn't have been Rich Paul. Like, yeah, Rich Paul knew LeBron. Anyone could not have been Rich Paul. Like, that dude has built an insane amount of power in the league and has leveraged it time and time again. I mean, even just like, you know, Shaedon Sharpe, 4 for $90 in an extension. Great contract. Like, Rich Paul's getting you 4 for $90 with Shaedon Sharpe, who's like really talented, but hasn't really proven anything yet, on a team whose cap situation's always already really weird, where they're paying Drew Holiday and they're paying Jeremy Grant, who, by the way, Rich Paul got paid. And like, Rich Paul is tremendously like, here's the thing. I'm not going to take another agent in the draft because I think it's kind of boring to just take a bunch of agents. And I could very easily take Mark Bartlestein, who is the guy who runs Priority and is a tremendously huge and important and influential agent who just gets guys paid over and over again, is responsible for so many of the maneuverings that happen behind the scenes of the league too. I just think it's kind of a boring podcast if I just take a bunch of agents. So I settled on Rich Paul because I think it's most interesting with LeBron's free agency coming up, which is still going to be like, I feel like we just kind of all aren't really talking about it because we don't know if it's really going to be a thing yet. But if he doesn't retire and it turns out he's just consistently doing Hennessy VSOP ads and not retiring, like, that's going to be such a huge deal. And we've all just kind of forgotten about it because there's so much other crap to talk about around LeBron. Like, the reason that they're building around Luka is because LeBron's a free agent after this year.
Yeah.
And I don't know if he's going to be back.
Yeah. I mean, listen, everyone's wondering, will he be on another team? Will he keep playing basketball? Will he keep playing in the NBA? Right? Like, these are all important questions. Nobody really has an answer, obviously. I mean, I think the last time LeBron was almost a free agent in 2018 or 2017, everyone kind of had some inklings of what was going to happen based on what was reported back then. I wasn't covering the league at that point, but I think people were writing about LeBron to LA back then already. There's nothing like it this time. There's nothing being telegraphed. So, yeah. And for Rich Paul's sake, what is life going to look like for Rich Paul after LeBron too? I would be curious to see that act of his career as well, for all the reasons that you said. That's a good pick. I like Rich Paul. I like this pick. All right. Number 8. I got one for you. I'm going to go with two guys as well. Go back into the ownership class. I'm going to go with Mark Laurie and Alex Rodriguez.
Oh, I love the A-Rod pit. You going to watch the A-Rod documentary on HBO Max?
Is A-Rod producing it?
I think so. I assume so. I honestly, I can't wait. I'm so excited. It's called Alex versus A-Rod, and I just can't wait. You know,
I used to cover baseball once upon a time in my life. And I don't know if you know this, but Alex Rodriguez was not highly well thought of in baseball when he was a player at the end of his career. And to see the way that his image has been rehabbed, and perhaps he has genuinely changed, it's been very fascinating to see him be an owner now. You know, I think one of my favorite pieces of journalism ever is when J.R. Maringer, I hope I'm saying his name right, spent like 6 months with Alex Rodriguez, wrote a like 4,000 word story and never quoted him once, which kind of speaks to how much people trusted what Alex said back then, right? But now he is a co-owner of the Minnesota Timberwolves. He is the lead governor of the Minnesota Lynx. But that's not just the reason why. It's not just because they are two of the three newest owners in the NBA along with Bill Chisholm. The Minnesota Timberwolves paid like $90 million in luxury tax last year. A-Rod and Laurie have said, we are willing to keep spending that money if it's worth it. We are not worried about short-term losses. We are thinking about this like a startup company where you take some losses and you've got your runway and eventually you sell for a lot more, right? Well, that makes me think of two things. One, how much longer are you willing to spend $90 million in luxury tax when you're in Minnesota? Because I don't think there's a great precedent of small market teams like that doing that. And the ones that did, like Milwaukee, got a championship out of it and stopped doing that for very long. And if that's the case, what does that mean for that Minnesota roster? They've been on the doorstep of the finals for two straight years with two Western Conference finals runs. If they're not willing to pay, you know, second apron type money going forward, something's got to give. Somebody's got to go. What happens if the Wolves underperform this year? What does that mean for Chris Finch? I assume Tim Connelly will be fine. He was a hire that they made and he is staying long term, but you would think there would be changes to be made, right? Like, they don't want to pay that kind of money if they do it all for a team that's just mid. And second of all, if you're thinking about this long term, about taking short term hits so you can make more money in the long term, how long is that long term? When are you thinking about selling? Like, that's sparked into my head too when you're talking about it like that. VC investors want to sell. They want to get a return for all that money. So that's why I have Lori and A-Rod. It's one, what are they doing in the short term? How long are they keep the roster together? That's a pretty good roster with a lot of really good young players. And two, they had a 3-year journey to buy the team. Like, are they already thinking about selling at some point in the near future? Or it's on their minds, at least. That's what they raised as evidence of why they're willing to pay this luxury tax. So that's why I got my number 8 here.
I love it. I want to take Derek Jeter with my next pick. We'll just keep going.
Him and Big Poppy.
I will say that show is really good.
It is.
That show is like legitimately, when they put Jeter, Poppy, and A-Rod on a studio show together, I was like, what the hell is this going to be? And it's just really good. I just really, really enjoy it. Just really good.
I agree with it.
They're really good on TV. It's a very fun show.
Yeah.
It's kind of got inside the NBA vibes.
Yeah.
And that leads me to my final pick.
It's your last pick. Make it good.
All right. Well, I said it has inside the NBA vibes. Should I say who I considered?
Yeah. Here? Yeah.
I guess it's fine. You know, you could take one if you want.
I just hear your leftovers.
I considered Bob Iger.
Okay.
Because, you know, runs Disney.
Sure. Important
considered job. Like Bezos, now Amazon partner.
Yep.
I was like, they're important in ways beyond. They're too important to be on this. You know what I mean?
Okay.
I feel like your primary point of power has to be in the NBA. I considered going like totally like off the board and taking a gentleman who you know, but I imagine a lot of people listening to this podcast won't, named Evan Wash, who
smart guy
works in the league office. And I feel like that's different than taking Adam Silver, right?
Yes, I would say so. Works in the league office, high ranking executive, but not Adam Silver himself.
Right, high-ranking executive, and he is kind of the mastermind behind a lot of, like,
yeah,
the innovative stuff that they do.
That would have been a great pick.
He does the scheduling. He's the guy behind the in-season tournament. He's the guy behind the play-in tournament. All the NBA Europe, there's stuff they're trying to do. That's a big deal. I think it would be a good pick. I think it's not as fun for a podcast as my next one. And okay. I, when I was making my board, I was thinking, like, who is the person who just has the power to persuade the entire public by saying one thing? Because that's power.
Yeah.
When you could just say one thing and the entire public narrative has changed. And I was like, and it's funny because you say that LeBron was the most powerful person in the NBA, but there's another person we lost from this list in the last year, which is Woj, who retired. So I kind of thought about Shams, but Shams is a little more down the middle. I didn't want to take him. Thought about Stephen A, but people kind of know that Stephen A is a character. And so I'm speaking of NBA, I'm taking Charles Barkley.
Okay. All right.
When Charles Barkley says something, it is immediately in the news. It doesn't matter what it is.
Yeah.
And Charles Barkley is capable of single-handedly changing the narrative on something. I mean, like, have you watched Starting Five?
I have not.
Have you watched it?
No.
So I haven't watched it yet. I watched last season. I didn't think it was very entertaining. Everybody says this season has been great. So I plan on watching it. I just haven't yet, but I've seen all the clips and the clips are great. And there's a clip on it of Kevin Durant talking about, like, him being like, I wasn't the bus driver in Golden State. I was changing the gas. I was cleaning the outside of the bus. Like, he was like, I played every role, you know? That was because 8 years ago, Charles Barkley said on TV that Kevin Durant isn't the bus driver in some analogy he made up. Right? Like that that Steph Curry was the bus driver. And if you're not the bus driver, you can't be talking about winning rings. You got to be driving the bus in order to talk about winning the rings. That was a comment from Charles Barkley 8 years ago that could hit social media with no further context. And the social media post would just assume, rightfully, that everybody knew what was being talked about in this post. Charles Barkley has a way of saying things, and whether you agree with him or not, it just being the narrative on a guy. That show is, I mean, I hope that show stays as good.
I hope it's exactly the same as it was.
I hope it's exactly the same. There are a lot of people who do what we do for a living who consider themselves like smart MBA people who are like, oh, I wish they'd teach. And it's like, yeah, I wish NBA TV and NBA media in general would teach the game more, no question. But like, oh my God, that show is so funny. Like, it is just one of the funniest shows on television.
Yeah. And can I take your point a step further? Because I really like it, and I like that you went with Chuck.
Yeah.
That guy has an ability to drive the conversation around the NBA like no one else. And now he will have the ESPN machine behind him to amplify every point he makes.
Yeah. Yep. And he's going to have, you're right, like, he's going to say some stuff on ESPN, and the next morning on all the shows, they're going to be like, Charles Barkley said this, what do you think? As opposed to just Stephen A. said this, what do you think?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that conversation is going to drive even more. I wonder if that's going to have the inverse effect on Barkley, though. I wonder if people are going to be like, oh my God, they're creating news for themselves. It's too much, you know?
I don't know. You know what? What I like about Barkley in that whole show is we are in an NBA media age of comfort and coddling, and they are willing to say the things they want to say. And I think having a bigger platform, not that TNT wasn't and Inside the NBA wasn't, but it's different when you say it on ESPN and ESPN runs the loop on SportsCenter, on the Stephen A. show, on whatever, everywhere, right? And so I think that's a net positive for the NBA ecosystem. So I'm curious what that's going to look like. I think this is a great selection by you.
Yeah, I mean, look, the guy can drive a narrative like nothing else. If Charles Barkley has an opinion, especially amongst just like kind of a casual fan going to tune in. Like, even people who are like, oh man, those guys, all they do is goof around. When Barkley says stuff, man, people just like get behind it. And it becomes the narrative, if only because sometimes so many people fight against it, that they're fighting against it makes that become the narrative. Like, Charles Barkley drives a national conversation like few people in sports media, and I would say like nobody in NBA media. And the power to get people to talk about whatever you're talking about, it's pretty good. That can get you elected president. That's pretty powerful.
That is pretty powerful. All right. Well, let me make my last pick then. What can live up to Charles Barkley? The most popular guy in the NBA, I would argue, period.
He also like genuinely is kind of the most popular guy in the NBA.
I mean, listen,
to be clear, I'm not just like coping for someone. I've never even met Charles Barkley.
I ran into him this past spring during the finals, and people love Charles Barkley. And he is a super nice guy off camera too. So like that's
that's what I'm saying. Everybody like, Good way to tell the character of people is you ask like the lowest level people who work with them, hey, what do you think of this guy? You know, like we both covered the Knicks. Like if you ask just like the lowest level, like line producer at MSG, like, hey, you interacted with Clyde at all, with like Clyde Frazier? They're going to be like, interacted with Clyde? Are you kidding me? He found out it was my grandmother's birthday and somehow he called my grandmother because he found out that she loved watching him play in 1968 and sent her flowers. And I was like, how did you even know it was my grandma's birthday? What are you talking about? And it's like, everyone's got that story with Clyde and you're like, oh my goodness, not only is he good to the people who are low, it's like the guy is a saint to every human being on the planet. And I feel like people react similarly, very different personality type, like unbelievably different personality type. But in terms of like warmth, I feel like people talk who know Barkley well talk about him in the same sort of way.
Yes. He is extremely generous, extremely outgoing. I think he curses just like a smidge more than Walt Frazier, just like a smidge more.
Well, they're very different personality types. Very different.
But yeah. All right. I'm going to make my last pick here. Now, here's some of the people I consider. I did think about Victor Wembanyama to continue this player empowerment stage. I understand he's going into his third season, and he's probably the next one, and maybe he puts, you know, we'll see how the season goes and how much he decides to put on the Spurs. But I said, just too many players on this list. And ultimately, where I landed is a place that you and I have been for many years. It's at Madison Square Garden. And I landed on the team president of the New York Knickerbockers, Leon Rose.
Hey.
Now, it's for a lot of reasons, right? One being, he's already had an immense amount of success. Two being, he's had an immense amount of stability in New York. And that is power in and of itself, right? Ask all the people who were in New York for a minute and gone once James Dolan decided they were no longer the answer. And he's had a lot of success there. And when you have stability and success in New York, that has a staying power and a virtue and a power of itself. And here's my question now. The Knicks obviously have been reported as a top suitor for Giannis, right? But outside of that, look, they can make the finals this year. And if they don't, and even if they do, they have the ability to change the league as well this next offseason. Mikal Bridges just re-signed, but that's a very tradable contract. OG Anunoby is very good, but he's not untradeable. And they have one of the smartest front offices in the league. And Leon Rose is the one making all the decisions. And he is the one who has the ear of Jim Dolan, who has the trust of Jim Dolan. And we've never seen that in New York with a title-contending type team and the fluidity and the intelligence to remake their team when they want to. And I understand they don't have a lot of picks, but that's such a smart front office where it's not going to be, you know, necessarily the end-all be-all from jumping into big trades. I think that they have a lot of, you know, I think Leon Rose has a lot of power going forward, and he has a way to shape this upcoming season in a way that very few people around the NBA do and very few lead executives do.
I'm into it. I'm into the league goes through so and so sort of pick. Like I think like you also could, like, if you wanted to, you could have combined your Wembanyama and your Leon Rose pick and done like R.C. Buford / Brian Wright in San Antonio. Been like San Antonio has Victor Wembanyama, has Dylan Harper, has Steph Castle, has all these really good draft picks. League kind of goes through San Antonio. League kind of goes through, you could have said like Rafael Stone if you wanted to. League kind of goes through Rafael Stone if the Rockets are fully capable of making another huge trade. Giannis becomes available, the Rockets are kind of capable of doing it too. Same similar logic to when I took Presti. I'm into it.
Yeah.
I'm into
and
it.
And also, like, go ahead.
Did you leave anyone on the table? Was there anybody who you were like, I wish I could have taken that guy or thought about it?
I really did think about it with Wemby. I don't know that anyone else is as close for me. I'm kind of curious about Bill Chisholm. He could reshape the Celtics very quickly if he so chooses. But I think it's too early with him. It's a little too early with him for me.
You know what? I shoot your wild with Chisholm.
No, I don't. I don't. You're just trying to get some portions of this podcast just cut out.
Why would you cut that?
You're lucky I don't have an editor.
Why would you cut that? That's a good joke.
Is there anyone you think we missed, Fred?
I don't think so. I feel like we kind of covered each category. Like we got some agents, we got some execs, we talked about some league people, talked about some players.
I think the one guy we miss, or the one sect of NBA folks we miss as coaches, And the two guys I would have had for Spo and Steve Kerr there for two different reasons.
What are the two different reasons?
I mean, Steve Kerr, obviously, free agent, right? If he decides to leave, what does that coach's search look like, right? The way the Warriors think, are we just, you know, I don't know if we don't necessarily have a team calling up sitting head coaches in the league next summer trying to get someone hired. And Spo, obviously, I think he's the future of the Heat, right? He has a lot of power in that organization. And not to mention, he's the new head coach of the U.S. men's national team. You know, that carries a lot of juice, too. I know it's not an Olympic year, but that carries a lot of juice, too.
That's a really good one. Spo's a really good one. That we could have done that. That's a very good one. Good call.
Yeah. All right. Kerr's I'm going to end it there.
We didn't say Steph Curry.
We didn't say Steph Curry, no. You know who I almost picked at number 10, honestly? LeBron James.
Yeah. We didn't say Steph. I don't think of Steph as powerful as much as I think of him as influential.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. Like, I don't think of him as like wielding power.
And I think that's kind of why he didn't make this list for me, is that he has power, but he has never used it.
Right.
Because totally. With great power comes great responsibility.
Yeah. I mean, we could have said like Jan Hansen.
Yeah.
Because
in a year from now, we might.
He's got an entire country of 1.something billion people behind him.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe Jan Hansen.
Just a little young to this list. Maybe next year, Jan.
A little young for the list.
Yeah. You know what's funny, Fred, is I asked you for 30 minutes to do this podcast, and we're now going over an hour. And
done.
I appreciate you. I appreciate you staying on. And
This was fun. I think this is a great idea for a pod. Yeah. I had a lot of fun putting my list together. It's a good thought exercise.
Yeah. I hope everyone at home enjoyed it. Fred, thank you so much for doing this. Like I said, follow Fred at The Athletic, read his work. Make sure to subscribe to Cats and Shoot, his podcast. I highly suggest that you listen to it if you're a Knicks or an NBA fan. Fred does a great job with that. Fred, is there anything you want to plug as I give you this window?
I was thinking I'd just give out my phone number in case Clippers want to call, just in case. No, patreon.com/catsandshoot. You can subscribe to the pod. My Twitter is at Fred Katz. Stuff at The Athletic. Have a Hawks feature out this week.
Who doesn't love the Hawks?
Have my weekly notebook starting up again on Friday. So look out for that if that was something you enjoyed last season. Yeah, that's it.
All right, everyone, thank you for watching and listening, Business Decision. Please subscribe to the YouTube channel, subscribe to the podcast, and we'll catch you guys next time on the next episode.